Welcome from Neuractive. My name is Luca Pertuzzi, Digital and Media Editor, and this is the Digital Brief podcast. This week, we take a closer look at Europe's positioning on emerging technologies. For an overview on all things digital in the EU, sign up to our free newsletter or visit the website euractiv.com. This is Euractiv's Digital Brief podcast. Today I'm joined by Jean-Marc Leclerc, Director of IBM's Policy Lab. Thank you, Jean-Marc, for joining us.
Thank you, Luca. It's great to be with you today.
So IBM is perhaps one of the most ancient tech companies still around. And you are a US company with a long history in Europe. I would be interested in your view on the ongoing debate on digital sovereignty. Can you give us your take on that?
Sure. Thanks, Luca. So on tech sovereignty, well, we've looked at this issue very seriously with the IBM Policy Lab. And our conclusion is that this is not or should not be a black or white issue or a for or against issue. It's a complex topic. And why is that? Because there are legitimate concerns, you know, around the behavior of certain players on the market, the risks for data privacy and security, etc. There are legitimate concerns. And in the end, it's all about trust and who you can trust with your data, with your technology. But for us, the question is more about how it's done, digital sovereignty in practice, if you like. Of course, building walls around Europe, that's protectionism. It doesn't work. It's not helpful for anybody, in particular for European companies. So, you know, if tech sovereignty is protectionism, then, you know, this is not something that can be supported. What is important, I think, for us is how you choose your partners. If this is done, if you choose partners based on, you know, the values that they have, if they are shared values, the capabilities that they have, how much they actually contribute to Europe's economy, this is a much better way than looking at just the geographic location of the headquarters. And so in short, if tech sovereignty is about indeed strengthening the technological capabilities, the digital transformation in Europe, that is great. And it is not, and it should not be incompatible with an open and an inclusive approach, if you like.
When this European Commission started this mandate, there was an assumption that Europe was not fit for the digital age. And there have been plenty of legislative as well as non-legislative initiatives to change the situation. So in regard to emerging technologies such as artificial intelligence, where do you think that Europe stands right now?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because the first paper we published as the IBM Policy Lab was actually about artificial intelligence and policy around AI. And what we called for back then, that was 2 years ago, was a precision regulation. And what it means is to encourage governments, policymakers, to find the right balance between innovation and security and really regulate what needs to be regulated and support what needs to be supported and you know, really strengthen AI adoption in the end as the ultimate goal and strengthen trust in AI as the other ultimate goal. Europe, it's the first ever comprehensive legislative proposal on AI, which the Commission published last April. I think it really builds on the right principles. You know, the risk-based approach in the proposal, I think it matches with this precision regulation we had been calling for. And in short, regulating the specific uses of AI systems, but not the AI technology itself, if you want. So that the approach is really good. And you see that many regions of the world are looking at the draft regulation for AI and wondering, okay, is this the right approach? So the principles, I think, are really, really good. Now, of course, if you go into the detail of the text, there are always things that can be changed or you know, let me be more precise, not necessarily changed, but clarified, because you know, all companies, not just providers, users as well, are looking at this regulation and wondering, okay, how am I going to comply with this or that? So it really needs to be clear. So there are elements that should be clarified. One element I think is really important is not just what you should do when you need to comply with the AI Act, but who should do it. So the allocation of responsibility throughout the ecosystem is really important. As you know, in the AI value chain, you have a lot of different actors who are, you know, providing, training, deploying, supplying, using the system. So it's a lot of different actors. So all those actors need to know where they are in the regulation. And to me, it's one point that is not very, very, very clear. But it's a very good start.
So the AI Act has been receiving a lot of attention, but the Commission has recently closed a public consultation regarding a complementary proposal on product liability for AI systems. Many tech companies, including IBM, have been arguing for excluding softwares and intangibles in the definition of products. Can you give us reasoning for this?
Sure. And, you know, let me say first that one key element, of course, in the question of on AI liability is to make sure there's consistency with the proposal, the AI Act, that's already on the table. You know, we were just talking just now on the allocation of responsibilities in the chain. This will impact any other rules on liability, of course. So, you know, if there are new rules on liability, it would, first of all, be really good to wait for the AI Act to be not just adopted, but also implemented to see if it is working well. That's the first point. On the issue of software, yes, I think applying strict liability to standalone software and AI systems is a bit disproportionate because they're very different from other products that you have that are covered under the product liability directive. As you know, software can be multipurpose, and very importantly, their use or their functioning depends on who uses them and how. That's a key point. So it's an evolving product, if you like, the software. So the strict liability, it wouldn't work. We cannot know the exact use, the purpose, and the application of a software because it's all decided by the user, if you want. So the strict liability, it wouldn't work.
For what concerns other emerging technologies such as quantum computing and cloud, there have been several initiatives at the national and EU level. What is your take on them?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of activity on cloud and quantum throughout Europe. And, you know, IBM is always very eager to join and support such initiatives. In particular, to be an advocate for open and flexible technologies like multi-cloud, if you want, as a good example. If I had to make one key point, and going back to our discussion on technological sovereignty, to me, around all these emerging technologies like cloud and quantum, the key element is cooperation. For cloud services, for quantum and other technologies, of course. The progress in quantum and in cloud, and in part, not just their development, but also their adoption, all lies in how companies and researchers work together. We have a lot of examples of very good partnerships. Let me give you one on quantum. We have an excellent partnership in Europe between IBM and the Fraunhofer Institute in Germany. It's a very good example of industry leaders, excellent research organizations getting together on Europe's soil to develop and put into production an emerging technology like quantum computing. So for me, all the projects around cloud and quantum, if we have to pick these two technologies, must have this cooperation element into them, or else they will not be successful.
So if I understand correctly, cooperation should be in place regardless of the origin of the company, because that's a big discussion that we have seen, for instance, regarding Gaia-X and other infrastructural projects, whether there should be non-European companies involved.
Where the company comes from, I don't think really matters. It's what they bring to the table that matters, and the values that they have. We are a part. IBM is contributing to the Gaia X project, absolutely. We're trying to push a specific approach there. On, for example, on cloud switching, we're pushing for, and I think there's a general agreement in France, in Germany, and within Gaia X as well, to try and develop practices that go against vendor lock-in, which is, I think, one of the reasons why the technological sovereignty approach has emerged, because there is vendor lock-in. So if Gaia-X can help fight against vendor lock-in practices, then it's great. And I don't think where your headquarters are should be an issue if you're pushing in this direction as well. So it's a question of values too.
IBM is also one of the main producers of microchips, very scarce technology these days. What is your expectation regarding the CHIPS Act that the Commission is due to present later this year?
Yeah, so on the issue of chips, so to be clear, IBM is mainly conducting research and development and really at the cutting edge of the technology, not so much the manufacturing. Like for example, just a few weeks, months ago, we launched the first 2-nanometer chip. But back to your question on the CHIP Act and the general debate around semiconductors. So a lot of focus has been put on manufacturing and where the manufacturing takes place. But the fact is that the demand for also for processing capacity is increasing constantly. So of course it requires manufacturing and a greater manufacturing capacity, but also constant innovation and research. So it means that the investment in different parts of the supply chain is crucial. So not just manufacturing, but also research. So my hope for the EU CHIPS Act is also that it will support research through funding, but it's not just a money issue. Like we've just discussed for quantum or cloud, for semiconductors, it's the same topic. It's the same issue. It's all about joint efforts and cooperation. So if the CHIPS Act can also facilitate and foster cooperation projects in Europe where industry leaders can easily join forces and, for example, link R&D, research and development, and manufacturing for specific projects, like you see in other regions of the world, then it would be a really, really great advantage for the CHIPS Act.
Jean-Marc Leclerc is director of IBM's Policy Lab. Thank you, Jean-Marc, for joining us today.
Thank you, Luca.
That's all we got time for this week. Don't forget to sign up to our free Digital Brief newsletter to receive a comprehensive overview on all things digital directly in your mailbox. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, published on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. I'm your Luca Bertuzzi, and thank you for listening.